Yes.
Well, we're at it again. This is another Saturday afternoon here.
Yes,
on Earth.
In New Jersey.
Yes.
We're not in a pool.
We're not in a pool. In fact, I hear that our last this is interesting. Our pool episode got like 11 listens.
Yeah.
So it's actually gained some traction. But you told me that you were listening to it a little bit, and that the sound quality wasn't the greatest. So I'm thinking, you know,
right,
what those 11 plays were,
right,
was it was a combination between you and British Mark listening to it for a total of 11 times,
right,
just because you didn't understand the audio the first time, so you had to listen to it again repeatedly.
Right. Well, I sounded good. I think I was shouting throughout most of the episode.
You got very excited at multiple points. I remember that.
Well, I hated that Barbie movie. I really did.
Right.
But by the way, I want to say that I'm glad that you're a male right now, because...
Well, that's me too.
Because the last podcast that I did was yesterday on the other platform that I do, and it was with a woman.
Uh-huh.
And she's 30 years old.
Oh, really? Okay.
And very attractive.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I mean, so, but this is what I learned. Like, in a podcast, I'm good with women, you know? If I could just talk to a woman in real life the way I do in a podcast, I might get laid once in a while.
Right.
But, I mean, of course, not with her, because she's 30 and she's, like, family, you know? Like, it was actually a very good, moving conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wasn't trying to hit on her.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, but it was after the podcast, because, you know, I did it on Zoom so you could see the other person.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm like, damn, she's really attractive. And I'm like, and she was telling me, like, how she lives in Israel now. She went to the beach and some guy just hit on her on the beach. I told her, I go to the beach all the time. Nobody ever hits on me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a very...
Did she give you, like, that awkward laughter?
I think she gave me a genuine laughter, but it's hard to tell with good-looking women.
Right.
They perfect the art of laughing. You don't know if it's real or not.
Right.
I think it was genuine. Let's assume it was genuine laughter.
Mm-hmm.
No, she was very happy about the podcast, and, you know, it was kind of a cool experience. But I'm glad that you're a male, because, like, if I was to do a podcast with a woman every time, it's a different dynamic. With you, I'm not that concerned, you know, with what I'm saying, you know what I mean?
Right.
But in a good way.
Right.
It's not like I take you for granted, you know? It's just that, you know, with a woman, it's a whole different dynamic.
Yeah,
you know, even though, you know, you're talking to a younger person that you're never gonna, you know, have, you know, sex with, you still sort of, it's still in the air, you know? You're still a
right.
man, she's still a feeling, you know?
Right.
So, but with you... We're never gonna hook up.
Right. I really should. I feel like I actually have that sort of quality with like pretty much everyone else in my life.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm sort of like that person they can just like talk
yeah.
to without thinking. I really should start to learn how to capitalize on that, like make money with it somehow.
I don't know how.
I need to start like my own side hustle.
Right.
Where I'm just that person that just listens.
Yeah, you're like the friend.
Right, I'm the paid friend who listens, and,
right.
and technically, because of my hearing issue, if you told me something that could, let's be honest, let's say you said something that could potentially be legally damaging, I would not be like a credible witness in court because
really?
Of my, I'm assuming, because of my hearing condition.
I don't know about that. Well, first of all, it has nothing to do with your comprehension level, so if I was to tell you something in private... It's not, your hearing issue would, and let's assume you heard me, you know, the fact that you could blackmail me, you could tell somebody else, like, you know what I mean?
But I'm saying, like, people could pay me to, like, tell me their secrets, and,
right.
like, if someone tried to call me to court, I'd be like,
right.
I'll be honest with you, I don't know if what I heard.
Right.
Because I have this condition.
Right.
I don't know if I can trust...
Right, so maybe in a way it makes you feel free in a way because you're like nobody can hold you accountable to what you're
right.
hearing, you know?
Right.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well,
I've had that idea in the back of my head for like a few months now. Actually,
I don't know how you could make money as somebody who's just like you know somebody that people confide in. You know,
it'd sort of be like going to confession, but without the whole religious aspect.
Who confides in you? Like just friends and. Like, I confide in you, but because we're doing a podcast, you
right.
know? Like, I don't know if I would confide with you if I didn't do a podcast. I mean, I probably would to a certain extent.
I mean, you always did before we did the podcast.
Right, but... yeah, but there was no life before this podcast, you know? No, you're right. I'm a pretty open book, so I'm not really worried about censoring myself.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, know? In my customer service, like, customer-facing jobs, like, people used to come up, like, we talk, and they would just tell me random stuff, and
right.
I've had people in the past, over the years, told me some, like, stuff.
Well, that's a good, I think that's, I mean, it could be a little, you know, over, I mean, that could be, is it a problem for you, you think? I mean, does it bother you that people tell you?
I think one way is kind of cool, and especially, like, sometimes when you hear, like, some of the things certain people have done, kind of makes me feel better about myself.
Right, because there's something about you that people seem to trust.
Yeah.
Maybe they know, I hate to say this, but maybe they know that you don't have any friends.
It's possible, yeah. I just give off that vibe. That's like, this dude, he's a lone wolf, man.
But you know what? Back to the conversation I had yesterday with, her name was Nicole.
A lot of Nicoles in your life.
Yeah, she's another Nicole. What's interesting about her is that she kind of reinvented herself in Israel. She moved to Israel, the place that triggers me the most, and that's where she feels the most comfortable.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, I have to have a conversation with her, you know? But she said to me that she doesn't have a lot of friends, but she's so okay with that. She goes, I learned that I don't give a shit what people think, and if I don't feel like I need to have friends, I don't need to have friends, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was very liberating to hear someone at 30 express herself in such a way, you know? It was cool. Mm-hmm. So it was wild for me, too, because I got to know... So this was part... We had, like, a memorial service for someone in her family that passed away in the wonderful Lake Luzerne that I go to. So I went to this thing, and it was, like, a really moving... This family... I haven't seen them in 35 years, a lot of them. I have a picture from 1973 where I'm actually, like, going swimming with some of her family members, and I haven't seen them in 35 years. So it was wild for me to be there. And I used to be really... This family is really cool. And then she got up and spoke, and she was very raw. She was crying. She was laughing. I mean, she was very brave. She said she had social anxiety, but she got up there anyway. So that's why I wanted to talk with her yesterday. And I didn't think she would do it, because I thought maybe she would be shy. But she goes, no, let's talk. So it was cool. But she really, like, she you know, she's brave. She moved to another country, and Israel's not easy, you know. So, but, you know, so it was, when I was 30, I was lost, you know. Mm-hmm. So I really was amazed that, you know, everybody has their own, like, journey in life, you know. But it was very wild, and I gave a little speech myself, which actually went. It always goes well for me when it's my family's not involved, you know. Because when my family member died, and then I gave a speech, I had to use the Hitler joke,
right?
And this time I said to myself, I said, no Hitler this time. You know, yeah. Whatever you do. So I had an opening line which I thought of pretty much on the spot. It was a good one. You want me to share it?
Sure.
I said, because Ginny, my Aunt Ginny, is sitting there.
Oh, Ginny, yeah.
Yeah. My brother.
Life is Dave.
He's sitting next to me, and he goes, you're gonna talk? You're gonna talk? You're gonna give a speech? I'm like, I'm thinking about it. And he goes, you're gonna be funny? You're gonna be funny? I'm like, I'm thinking about it. You know?
Just why he keeps repeating himself?
I don't know. He's very, you know. He also asked me to put suntan lotion on him this weekend, and I was there, I didn't enjoy that.
Yeah, that sounds really weird.
He's got, like, more hairier and more moles on his. I think 10 years ago I wouldn't have mind touching him, but now it just felt like invading.
That sounds so wrong.
It sounded. I know. But, like, just you know, he's my brother. I'm allowed to touch my brother. I mean, oh, whatever. Anyway, let's not dig a hole. So Ginny's over there. So I'm like, I gotta start with a joke, but I don't know what joke to use. I can't do the Hitler joke. So I looked at my aunt. I said, okay, I got it. So I got up there. I said, hi, I'm Danny Siegel, which is already kind of funny because, you know, people know me, so I don't have to. Said, hi, I'm Danny Siegel. I'm Ginny Mason's nephew, but I also have my own identity. Mm-hmm. That got a laugh.
Nice.
And then I said nice things about her family and stuff. So it was an interesting. And then the people that I used to hang out with are now older, you know. Time goes on.
Right.
And so it's just weird to, like, I mean, and we, you know, it was easy to talk to them and fun, but I don't recommend taking 35 years off between, if you have a friend, try to see them, like, once a year, you know, or, I mean, 35 years is a long time. you know. I mean, I recognize them, but there were, you know,
that's
I'm sure
that's almost as long as I've been alive.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm sure. I mean, they saw me. I'm sure they were kind of like, "Oh my God, that's Danny." But then, you know, you get used to it after a few minutes. So, so anyway, that was a wild experience. But you know, it's also cool because, like, you know, like sometimes I meet somebody, and I'm like, "Oh, you know, they would be good for a podcast." And then if they're into it, then it's a win-win. Like, I hate to push somebody into it,
yeah.
But she was really good. So, but you're not a hot chick right now,
right?
Which
or
actually
I never was, nor will be.
Right. And I just feel like, you know, if I was to do a podcast with a woman every time, that would be tough for me. You know,
I think it could help though.
I mean, what if we had, like, a third person? Like, a woman? She would just chime in once in a while, you know?
That'd
like,
be fine, yeah.
You think?
I think so.
You don't think you would be distracted by the fact that, you know, she's a woman? Because we have a very guy thing here.
Right.
You know, like, we talk about men stuff.
Yeah.
And if a woman was
she could
here,
offer a good female perspective on male and female things.
You think?
Yeah.
I think it might ruin the podcast.
It's possible. I mean, like, it's like in a show late that's like seven seasons in, they add like a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like every time we've had a woman on the show, which hasn't been a lot.
Maybe like once.
No. Well, my Aunt Ginny called once by accident. she's a woman. But yeah. We've had the promise of many women on the show.
Oh, right.
And they
right.
never
they,
came.
They bailed out.
They always bailed out, yeah. So we don't really know. But I mean, we could try it. I don't know how we would get a woman on the. Yeah, we would have to kidnap a woman,
yeah.
And like be like, okay, she'd be like, "What do you want?" Be like, "We want you to be on our podcast.
We just want you to be on our podcast for like an episode." Then you're
free to go. we'll feed you.
Yeah,
we'll give you blue moons.
Yep.
We're tied, but she has to be tied up though, just in case, because I don't want to have to worry about her running away during the show.
Right.
So she would just like sit here and like and just try. I mean, she would be like tied up.
Mm-hmm.
But and they should be like, try to be funny. I know you're stressed out because your hands are tied.
Mm-hmm.
But just once in a while, just say, yeah, we could. I don't know. I kind of like the fact that this is a guy thing.
Yeah.
You know. But anyway, so did you need to speak about something?
There are a few things I had a few all developments.
Right. All right, let's go slowly.
Okay.
Because we have time. We can milk this.
You can totally milk it.
Yeah.
Like a cow.
Okay,
so I guess the first thing.
Okay.
You know, I finally got my Metallica ticket for tomorrow's
show.
Oh,
yeah. Metallica's a band. British Mark.
Metallica's a band in...
they're from where?
They're originally from Los Angeles.
Okay.
You know, they've been around since the 80s.
Very, very loud.
Very loud.
Nothing ever matters. Was that their song?
Nothing Else Matters, but that one's actually a more melodic ballady type
song. I chose that to initiate the people that don't know. You start with the soft song.
Right.
And then you go to the
Yeah, if you've never listened to Metallica, start with 1991's self-titled album, also known as the Black Album. That
right.
was when they decided to go a little bit more mainstream.
More commercial.
Yeah.
Right.
Still a great album though.
Right. So you got your ticket. This is a very big moment because I see a lot of concerts, but you pick and choose, right?
Yeah. I'm a little nervous because it's my first time going to a concert by myself.
You have gone to Cleveland to
I've gone yourself. To Cleveland, but at the same time, it's also a metal show.
Right.
So, and I'm up in the area where there are going to be mostly people who didn't pay a lot for their tickets. So,
right.
I mean, that could be too. It could be people who simply couldn't afford to sit closer, and also people who were like, I just want to be there, I don't have to spend too much money, which is
right.
I'm more like the former, but at the same time, even if I could afford it, I probably wouldn't even have spent more money
right.
to get closer.
What did you spend?
I think like total like taxes and fees was like just over 100.
Oh, right, that's good, yeah, because like for Bruce, I pay 400, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so you're sitting, right, so, but what's your concern, that there will be, like, crazy people next to you?
I guess so, yeah. Which, I think about, I'm like, well, it doesn't make any sense, because people, they're going just like I'm going, they're going to have a good time.
Yeah, you're not going to be sitting next to a gang in Trenton, because they can't afford a Metallica ticket.
Right, then they probably wouldn't go to Metallica.
Right, they go to, like, some rap, crazy Trenton rap
yeah.
night, right. So, okay, so that's, I think that concern could be alleviated.
Yeah.
But that's cool.
Yeah. So that should be pretty good. I figure I'll stay there for as long as I feel like it, and then
yeah.
I'll have my fill. I'll go home and I'm taking the train, so that's...
Right. Yeah, that's cool, man. That's your first time seeing Metallica, right?
Second. I saw them back in 2009 with an old friend of mine.
Oh,
up
yeah?
In Long Island.
Was that good?
That was pretty good, yeah. It was like... I've only been to less than a handful of concerts, and
right.
I think that was only like my second one I'd been to, and that was a phenomenal show.
Right.
And, that was for their ninth album, Death Magnetic. It was that tour.
Right.
This is for their 11th album now.
Right. So. Yeah, man, that's cool. I'll be at a concert tomorrow as well, not at the Metallica show.
Right.
I'm going to Paul Thorne. It's like it's completely different. But actually, I'm going with my friend Melissa. She doesn't know this. But we actually...
Oh, she doesn't know she's gone?
No. we haven't talked in a while, so I'm assuming that she better remember. But last time I went, I befriended these people. And, you know, they're the Carpenters. Jeff Carpenter and his wife. And,
oh, so not the musical duo from the 70s.
No, they're dead.
Oh.
Well, she's dead.
She's dead, yeah.
Yeah, she... Anorexia, you know. Yeah. She should have eaten something.
Yeah.
No, I think many podcasts ago, I probably mentioned this guy, Jeff Carpenter, because I met him at a Paul Thorne show, and now every time Paul Thorne plays, he goes, "You going? You want to have dinner together?" And I'm like, "Not really. I mean, he's okay.
Yeah.
You know, but his wife, yeah, you know what? You know, it's like now it's a thing. This is the third. But then I said, "Look, I'm going to be there with Melissa," and he goes, "Oh, who's Melissa?" And I'm like, "She's a friend." So now,
I like how you're making him out to be aggressive when he's probably not even.
No, he's funny. He drinks a lot, you know. So right. And Paul Thorne has a lot of like funny, cool blues. But he's a cool guy. But I think this guy Jeff Carpenter, it's a license for him. He's like a truck driver.
He was the guy that was there with his wife, and then she was like kind of like bored the whole time.
Yeah. I later learned that she wasn't bored. She just is quieter than him.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't think she liked me, but I think she likes me. She friended me on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but you know, Jeff Carpenter, he's a truck driver, you know, and then like he goes out once a year to Paul Thorne, you know, so it's like a big night for him. So now I'm like, So Melissa doesn't know that we have to have dinner with the Carpenters.
Okay.
You know, like, I didn't want to... She might be upset. And then she won't be upset, but it's not something that she's going to be thrilled about.
Mm-hmm.
So I just figured I'll spring it on her last minute.
Oh, that's going to go great.
Plus, yes. Melissa, you know, she smokes a little pot. By the time she gets there, she'll be out of her mind.
Yeah.
Like, I could probably have dinner with Jeffrey Dahmer, and she probably wouldn't care. So now we have... We have dinner with the Carpenters, and then she also doesn't know that our seats are not together. I mean, I'll spring that on her late.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, it's in the same row.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, you know, like, I didn't, you know, I couldn't find two seats together, so she's gonna have to live with all these problems tomorrow night. But, yeah. I mean, what? And I'm driving, whatever.
Mm-hmm. And where is that?
So this is a really weird place. Called Sellersville, Pennsylvania, and it's in the boondocks of Pennsylvania, and it's a really nice theater, but it's like it's out there. It's like
the majority of Pennsylvania is the boondocks of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and it's next to a very nice restaurant. That's where we're gonna have dinner with the Carpenters. You know, where's your thing? Your thing is MetLife.
A MetLife Stadium. That's cool. Rutherford, yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, so that's where Bruce is playing in a few weeks.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, I haven't gone. Bruce is coming to Philly next week.
Oh.
And I feel like I have to go, you know, but two shows. I don't even have a ticket for one of them. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I have to, you know, there's too many concerts happening.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, that's cool. Metallica's cool. I didn't tell you to shift gears. I saw Oppenheimer.
Oh, you saw Oppenheimer.
But here's the caveat. I saw the first part and walked out.
Oh, shit.
Because it was 3 hours long and I'm very busy. So I finished. I'm busy. I'm a busy person.
So did you not know it was 3 hours?
I did, but I figured I'll see how I feel in the hour and a half mark.
Okay.
I'm also very busy. So I figured, I'm stupid. I paid the full price. I'm going to do it again and see the second half next week.
Okay.
So I'm doing it in increments. But I have some issues with the movie. I know you saw the movie.
Right.
Some of it is very good, but, you know... Fucking montages, man. this movie has montages. There's montages in the movie, and we talked about montages. Montages, it's not menage a trois. It's, you know, what the definition of montage is, a series. How would you, what would you say?
Okay, okay. Okay, now, my definition may be different from what everyone else thinks.
Okay, well, what's your...
Okay, my definition of a montage, now, it still incorporates the music. Okay, so it's...
It's usually the music.
It's a series of scenes that play out over music.
Yes.
And those scenes within the storyline of the movie take place over a certain period of time. It's like me...
Right.
Like, it's like... A lot of people claim that Top Gun has a lot of montages. I don't believe they do.
I claim that.
I don't believe they do, because a lot of people, they reference the volleyball scene. They reference some of the lovemaking scenes. And right. To me, those aren't montages. Okay. Sure, they're set to music.
Okay.
But they're set one period of time.
So here is the thing, okay?
Okay.
Here's the thing. Our definitions are the same, except that you think the montages involve a different timeline. And for me, I'm...
Not a different timeline. They span a period of time. Like the Rocky training montages, they span a period of time.
Right. But for me, a montage is anything that doesn't have dialogue and has like a set up to music, and it's just like little cuts of little scenes. That to me is a montage. Doesn't matter about the time. And to me, a montage is a little bit of a cop-out because there's no dialogue.
Okay, so I'll adjust my definition a little bit. It could also be one where, even if it doesn't span the amount of time, like it cuts between two different like settings,
right?
Scenes, like right. Two different characters. Okay. That I also apply
okay.
to.
Okay. So volleyball scene and Top Gun.
I don't think it's a montage.
But it is okay to me. That is a montage. It's not as bad of a montage as those ridiculous shots of the airplanes that take place for, you know, to a song from the 80s for like 20 minutes long. But, okay, Rocky IV, he's driving in the car and he's got flashbacks and he's driving in the car. You know, that to me is also a montage. But anyway, the problem, let's get away from the definition. We know what we're talking about, right? There's no dialogue. It's like, and a lot of it is a cop-out because... It's like, okay, we have to fill some time. We don't have a screenplay for this moment. We don't have any words.
And I think I know what you're talking about. A lot of Nolan's films have those kind of sequences.
Yes, yes. Miami Vice does that too, sometimes a little too much. Mm-hmm. You know, so, okay. So the problem, I think, there's a lot of great things about, I could tell, I saw it for an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of great things about it. The montage problem for me is, you don't see the problem with the problem with the movie is this. You don't. There's a lot of great things. I'm sure when the bomb thing happens, I'm sure it's great. I haven't gotten to that yet. That's a great sequence. I'm sure it is.
Just the build up to it is great.
But that's the thing. I feel like the movie. You said the words build up. I feel like it's building up. A lot of his movies are something is great, something big is going to happen, and the movie's building up towards it.
Well, generally, pretty much every story itself is a build up to a climax.
I don't agree.
No.
No, I think Oppenheimer felt like a trailer to me within the movie. So, the problem with the montage shit, it's also the movie itself. You don't know how Oppenheimer feels. It's not about his internal world.
Oh, I see.
And it's about the story, and there's a lot of stuff with other characters, and I think it's kind of a mess. But it's a good mess.
I think more of that stuff comes about. If I remember correctly, a lot of that more comes about in the second half.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, the montage situation is a problem for me. You know, because for me, like, it's okay to do it a little bit, but like when also a lot of the scenes in Oppenheimer are not even scenes; they're like quick shots. Right? It's edited very. It's almost like there's hardly even a scene. You'll see a. People talking and then quickly move to another scene, and maybe he did that because for various reasons, but I just felt like it didn't really. The problem is
I know what you mean, like with his with Nolan's, a lot of Nolan's montages.
Mm-hmm.
I can see the definition apply, my definition even applying to that, because like it's even when they don't have, even if they do have dialogue, like this it starts out with one scene.
Yeah.
Maybe a character's explaining something, then like through the montages they jump forward in time to sort of show what's happening very quickly. Then they'll also go back to that original scene where the characters are talking. Right.
That's cool. And he's an amazing director, so it looks really great. The problem for me was that you don't know how he's feeling, you know? And that is really... Okay, let's take this to life itself, okay?
Okay.
Life itself is not a montage, okay? You don't see scenes... You don't get up in the morning and go to work and then do all your things like a montage. It might feel that way, mm-hmm. but really the crux of the day is how you feel while you're doing the things that you do. And Oppenheimer, you don't know how he thinks. You know what he's feeling. You don't know if he... it would be so interesting to know if he felt guilty about the fact that he's about to, like, create a bomb that could destroy the world. I mean, there's a lot of... You see a lot of great dialogue, but you don't really know what he's thinking.
I think sometimes, like, with Oppenheimer, I feel like there are a lot of things that, like, just the... you may not see... necessarily what he's like, how he's processing stuff, right. But it's like you're able to see, at least through the lens of the movie, you're able to see like who he was, what kind of person he was,
right?
Like the beginning when he's thinking about poisoning his professor,
yeah,
like you think that,
right?
It's like little bits of information that point to,
yeah,
like, at least again,
yeah,
through this movie, who,
yeah,
this guy was. And
yeah,
again, like, it's one of those things where I think, like, in the second half, it delves more into that. A lot of the first half is building up toward, like,
right,
the building of the bomb and all,
right,
that.
Right. Yeah, no, maybe I'll change my opinion if I see the whole movie.
But I
can only speak for the first hour and a half.
Yeah.
You know. But, I don't know. I mean, like, but all right, let's go to Rocky IV for a second.
Absolutely.
All right, we all know Rocky IV. We all know how I feel. It's not the best Rocky movie. It became a little cartoonish for me. You know, and there's a lot of montages, okay? Like, the first... Okay, I don't consider the training sequences a montage, really, okay? I do consider them a montage, but I consider them a montage that is necessary, that works. Because you want to see him train, you want to see him get stronger over a period of time. You can't do that by dialogue. You have to show it.
Right, yeah.
So that is a perfect use of a montage. I agree with that.
Okay.
What I don't agree is him being in the car, listening to a crappy song that Frank Stallone is singing, and because he can't get a job anywhere else. Fucking Frank Stallone.
Is it really Frank Stallone, though?
He sings one of the songs. he's also singing a song in Staying Alive, the John Travolta horrible sequel, directed by Stallone. So Stallone is always giving Frank a crumb. Fucking Frank Stallone. So anyway... So he's in the car, and, you know, this is a very 80s thing, you know. You see him, like, think about, you know, some flashback. He sees Apollo Creed going down in the ring, and, you know, he's got to, you know, There's No Easy Way Out is playing. You see him shift the gears. That goes on for, like, 45 minutes. And it's like...
More like three, but okay.
Okay, but it feels like 45, and it's like... You know, it's like Stallone's like, well, I think over here I don't need to write any words. I'm just gonna do a montage. Top Gun did it for, you know. So
Rocky IV came out before Top Gun.
Whatever, it's an 80s thing. you know, I just feel like those situations, it feels like it's okay. It feels like it's filler. You know, filler, like you have a crappy song and a good album.
Right.
That's filler.
Right.
That's what I feel like montages often, not always, but often can fall into. That's what I have a problem with it.
Right.
So, I get very upset by it. You know, I get very upset, Ryan, because life is not a montage.
Right.
You know, life is about, it also takes away, a montage is like the opposite of emotion. You know, it's an opposite, it's just showing you something. Hey, I'm a good director. I can like do this. I could show you sitting in this chair that I could show.
I don't necessarily agree.
All right, well, that's where you are.
Because montage is based on how they're constructed can actually be used to elicit emotion.
What emotion do you have when Rocky is driving his car? I mean, you see it just seems very hokey to me.
Well, to me, one could argue that that's meant to elicit maybe feelings of, like, the past, longing of the past, and...
Right.
like maybe regret.
Right.
And then just sort of like feeling like the weight of the situation.
Yeah, that's what he's going for. But it's, to me, as the audience member, it would be much more effective if you have a quiet moment, you just see him without any music or any like fanfare, just sitting, you know, kind of like in Rocky III where he throws his helmet at the statue. Goes, oh, yeah. Mick! That's more powerful to me than like... you know, so I think sometimes it just seems like a cop-out to me, you know? Not always. So I just think, you know, I just have very mixed feelings about Oppenheimer, you know? Like, the fact that he uses that, and it's also being billed as, like, the greatest movie of the century. It's really good. It's got some, I'm sure the ending is really good. I just think it has a lot of problems. It's not the movie of the century.
I wouldn't say the century. I say it can easily be contender for, like, the decade.
No, I have that. So. No, the decade? What decade?
This decade. The decade, which also hasn't had too many.
All right, let's think of a better movie. Great
releases overall.
2000. So you're talking about
the 2020s.
2020. Okay,
that's the decade we're currently existing in.
I know what's going on. I just want to this decade.
Right. This decade.
I say.
There are movies I've enjoyed that have been released this decade, but
yeah, I don't see this. I just think there's a lot of problems with it. I mean, for example, let's go to The Godfather for a second. So you see Al Pacino, young Al Pacino, he's in the restaurant. The gun is hidden in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. I mean, you feel every emotion that he's feeling, tension.
Yeah.
You don't get that in Oppenheimer. You don't get. Moments you get, you know,
movies are made differently than they were in the 70s.
Well, that's why, it's not, yeah. That's a problem for mm-hmm. me, you know. So to call it the movie of the decade, I mean, I got a lot more from movies that I've seen, like Coda, which won the Oscar last.
Oh, right.
I mean, emotionally, I got a lot, I mean, but that's the kind of movie I like, you know, so
right.
So I it's also being billed as such a great movie because there are hardly any good movies out there, you know. So that's that's not the right. Like in the 70s, this would not be called a great movie. It would be called also, you know. Okay, he's trying to be Spielberg. I kind of feel like Nolan is trying to be He's trying to be like he's trying to make this his Schindler's List. He's trying to I could just see that he's trying hard to make this. His big movie, and that I don't know. That's what it's just weird.
Actually, I got like the vibes I got from this one remind me more of The Imitation Game. That kind of bio.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. But you know how like Spielberg, okay, Schindler's List. You seen Schindler's List?
I've seen Schindler's List.
So before that, he had like E.T. and Jaws and all these great movies, but never a Schindler's List, right? That was like his big serious movie.
I mean, and, he did The Color Purple, but that.
Yeah, nobody saw that.
Actually, Empire of the Sun. That was pretty decent. That was like Christian Bale's film debut as a kid.
Yeah, I don't remember that at all.
Right, I seen it once.
Yeah, I never saw The Color Purple.
I saw it once.
Yeah, that's about what like
I went through a Spielberg thing where I saw all Spielberg's films.
Yeah, yeah. Color Purple's good.
It was all right. It was definitely like, especially at that time for him, that was definitely heavy.
Right. But, well, yeah. So he did the plight of the slaves, and then he was like, oh, "Okay, we did that. Now we can do the plight of the Jews."
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you do the plight of the Jews, you might as well do a Holocaust movie. That's probably the biggest plight of the Jews. So anyway, so that's his big, like, you know, and he's Jewish himself. So there's a lot of writing on Schindler's List.
Yeah,
and I don't know.
And it released the same year as Jurassic Park, so he had a hell of a year in '93.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, Jurassic Park is not the plight of the dinosaur.
Right, you know? Exactly.
Actually, it's not the plight of the dinosaur. Do they get extinct at the... No, the end of the Jurassic Park, what happens?
The first one, they just kind of, like, roam free, and then...
Right.
The people just, like, escape in a helicopter.
Right, so it's not really the plight of the dinosaur.
It's not the plight of the dinosaur. One could argue it's about the exploitation of a dead species.
I like the... Right. I like the usage of the word plight, because it's not a word that I say a lot.
Right.
Plight.
Right.
I don't think I've ever said that in my life.
Oh. Yeah.
But now I've said it twice, like plight of the dinosaur, plight of the Jews.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I only saw the first Jurassic Park.
It was easily the best one. And you're not missing anything without seeing any of the others.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because we had, before this podcast, we talked about Back to the Future, and you started saying crazy shit about, like,
I make the confession?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, I recently rewatched Back to the Future Parts 2 and 3.
Right.
I hope you're sitting down for this.
I think
you're doing. Mark, if you're doing dishes, put your dishes down. For the love of God, do not be holding any dishes right now, especially any knives.
Right.
So, growing up, Back to the Future 1 was easily my favorite.
Easily.
And as the series continued, they decreased. Like, 2 is my second favorite, 3.
Right.
After seeing the sequels again.
Right.
Now, be fair, I haven't seen 1 in a few years.
Right.
So this could easily turn the tide back around.
Oh, I'm sure it will.
I am leaning on the very real possibility that Back to the Future 2 is my favorite, followed by 3, followed by 1.
Yeah, okay, that's crazy talk. The only reason you're saying that...
It could be recency bias.
Yeah, recency bias, and you don't really need to see Back to the Future again because you know it by heart. The only reason you're saying that is because you know Back to the Future so well that you like the newest ones, the later ones, because you don't know them as well.
So right. I've watched them a lot as a kid, but like just seeing them again...
Right. It feels fresh to you in a way that one... It's like Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know it so well that you kind of think, oh, maybe I like the other Indiana Joneses better.
Well, that definitely won't happen. I've rewatched those movies lately.
Right.
That's Raiders still reigns supreme in my mind.
Yeah, well, good, as it should be. As should Back to the Future be.
Right.
I mean, Back to the Future has like so many smart scenes. I mean, regardless of the plot, there's just such smart, you know, dialogue. Mm-hmm. Which I don't think second and third have, you know.
Right. I mean, you haven't even seen the whole thing.
I've seen enough, you know. No, you're right. I should see the second one. I think I've tried and I kind of gave up.
Right.
You know, I don't like it when the movie gets confusing and I have to think about it. Like everything all at once, it's fucking annoying. You know, like I want something. I mean, I'll allow it for Miami Vice, you know. But like,
I'm glad you have some standards.
Well, I have standards. I told you I was arguing with someone yesterday in Germany about the seasons of. You know, I mean, the thing is that you know people get passionate about these things, you know, but you know I'm sure you might have some valid points about Back to the Future 2. I am sure that Back to the Future 3, when they go to become cowboys, I don't think there's any redeeming quality in that movie. I know I will see. I will watch it.
All right.
But I think I've tried to watch it, and I mean. Cowboy movies are very hard to pull off, especially if you're coming from the future and you end up, you know. Does he have a love interest in the third one?
Doc Brown does.
Doc Brown does?
Yep.
With Mary Steenburgen-y?
Yep.
Oh, God. That's terrible. That makes me even want to watch it less. She's always the same in every movie.
Yeah.
What is she, like a saloon owner?
Nah, she's a school teacher. Who's into science fiction, which is like a common interest between her and Doc.
So let me guess, that it becomes like an endearing relationship where it's like he starts to soften up, and do they end up together at the end?
I mean, you may watch it, so I don't know if
I'm going to spoil it. Don't tell me. I just have a problem with her. You know, she's riding on Ted Danson's coattails, you know. Right. I mean, without him, I don't think she would have been anything, you know? Mm. I mean, what good has she done?
Well, she was also in Gilbert Grape, but she was only mainly, like, in the first half of the movie.
Right, because she just stands there. Mm-hmm. The name of this episode should be, like, Mary Virgin Steam Virgin.
Steam Virgin.
She just stands there. No, I just, I don't know. I mean, remember that movie, Green Card? Remember that French guy that we saw from the closet? Gerard Depardieu.
Oh, yeah!
He was in Green Card, too, I think. Which was with a woman that is always very the same, but I can't think of her name. She's in Green Card. Look it up. And she's always like, you know, she's like Mary Steenburgen-y. She's like always kind of the same character in every movie.
Okay.
But anyway, I don't want to, you know, listen, Michael J. Fox, God help him. He's got Parkinson's. Yeah. I mean,
I heard he came out with a documentary about him.
I know. I've been waiting. Yeah, it's supposed to be really good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when I was a kid, I used to watch Family Ties, you know. Yeah.
He was good, like, as an actor, and, like, because he played multiple roles in the Back to the Future sequels.
Right, right.
And it was actually kind of
cool. Well, he had to do it because the script was so bad.
Well, it was actually kind of cool. So in part two, I didn't know this until I looked it up after rewatching it. He actually plays his daughter in it, and I never knew that.
Really?
Yeah.
But dressed as a girl? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's funny.
Well, it was actually kind of cool. I was looking up because I guess when they were filming the sequels, they invented the new type of camera that, like, had a way of remembering, like, its prior movements.
Oh.
So that's how they were able to film a scene where he played three different people, like, in the same shot. It's like they would film him playing one character first, and the camera was able to remember its movements, right. So it was able to replicate the shot the same way again, so he could do the other characters.
The beginnings of AI.
Mm-hmm. Well,
sort of.
I guess, yeah, like a self-thinking, like, camera. That's
so he plays. Well, I wonder why they. I mean, kind of like Eddie Murphy playing, like, different parts.
Oh, and, yeah, the clumps. Yeah.
Yeah. But Michael J. Fox doesn't have, like, a farting sequence in the...
Nah.
No, Michael J. Fox is a good actor.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I feel he was actually underused because he did all those, like, cute movies in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, Doc Hollywood, mm-hmm. which is actually really good.
Teen Wolf.
Yeah, right. Secret of My Success, all those movies.
Homeward Bound, he does the voice of Chance the Dog.
Right, right. Nobody saw that.
I did. That's a great movie.
Oh, did you see the Ninja Turtles thing?
I did.
Oh, jeez.
I did fall asleep, though, toward the end, but really? I actually liked it.
You did? Okay. Well,
it wasn't. Know. It's not as good as, like, the original 80s to 90s cartoon.
Right.
Or the animated film Batman versus Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Right, but, right. Okay, so we talked about Metallica.
Right.
Did you have another pressing? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. All right.
So,
Not Metallica.
Not Metallica related. This has to do with acting, actually.
Okay.
So I got an email. I got, like, a message from Roberta.
Uh-huh. SVP. Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I think this was maybe last week.
Okay.
Yeah, last week she asked me if I would be interested in going out for this one show that was going to be going on at Villagers.
Okay.
Called Swept.
Right.
So at first I was like, I didn't feel like committing.
Right.
I was like, let's give it a shot. So, like, she contacted the director. Director reached out to me. I did a reading of a scene, sent it to her. Didn't get cast. That's fine.
Right.
I really didn't want to do, like, 3 weekends anyway.
Right.
So I got an email the other day from, like, someone else. This one theater in, like, the Plainfield / like Metuchen area.
Okay.
They're doing a show called India Pale Ale, running for only one weekend mm-hmm. in September.
Okay.
So that's actually, like, perfect for me because one weekend's fine.
Right.
So I talked to the director last night, and I'm actually – it's a small role. I'm, like, the one white person in the cast. Everyone else is Indian.
Okay.
I'm going to be – after this, I'm going to be heading down there to pick up the script.
Okay.
So that's
– in Plainfield, huh? Yeah, I think
Dragonfly.
Yeah. I haven't been there, but I've heard of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's cool, man.
Yeah.
So you got to play the non-Indian part. Yeah. I was actually cast as the Indian, so...
Oh, you were?
Yes, yes. I have to wear, I don't know, feathers and... No, I wasn't cast. but that's cool. That's cool, man. I mean, listen, anything, you know, that... Who knows?
Yeah, and it's next month, so it's going to be a quick rehearsal process.
Right.
One weekend.
Right, right. This is if you survive the Metallica concert tomorrow.
That's true.
You know, you could come back all bruised, you know?
Yeah.
With a guitar inside your brain.
Yeah. maybe, like, James Hetfield will see me from the stands, be like, this guy, down here, let's get him playing with us.
That's my version of every Metallica song.
And I'll end up going on the road with Metallica for, like, the rest of their tour.
That would be amazing. That would be amazing.
They'll get laid.
No, that's cool, man. People are reaching out to you, like, asking you. Nobody's reaching out to me.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's, you know, I go to the beach, nobody asks me out, you know? Mm. Like, I'm what am I, chopped liver? Well, I'm, like, invisible.
Yeah.
Like, maybe I'm just too old. Maybe I should just, like, go into an old age home right now. Somebody should just feed me grilled cheese and pizza and... I'll just sit down there like in a chair like Gaber. Just like I complain about my lungs. I'm going to be so old. I think I'm going to be... Oh, actually, I'm going tonight to the Stone Pony where, you know, Bruce used to play.
Yeah.
So Stone Pony is in Asbury Park. It's a famous club. But actually, I was going to say that I'm going to be the younger one, but I'm not because John Eddie's been around for a long time. And it's actually his first show in 3.5 years.
I know shit.
So he went to Nashville and kind of disappeared. So it's actually, it's kind of a big, it's, I mean, so I'm there's going to be a lot of like cougars and cougars' mothers.
Oh,
like man. I'm actually
be around women your own age.
Yeah, and yeah, that's going to be horrifying. I hate women my own age. I really do. I had, okay, so I was talking to like two women like on dating sites, you know, and they're my age, you know, and it's like, ugh, the conversation's terrible, you know. I need somebody like 10 years younger, like at the most, you know, and I'm fucked because nobody 10 years younger wants to date me, you know. So I'm never getting laid ever again. I really don't think it's going to happen.
You may have to make the ultimate sacrifice and just go with someone your age, man.
But no, but I can't. I mean, it's just personality-wise. They just, I'm just, you know. All right, I was talking to someone, you know, from a dating site. I won't mention any names. But they're in Brooklyn, right? It's like two from Brooklyn.
Oh, right.
Right, yeah. And one of them, you know, we said we're going to get in touch after I came back. And nobody got in touch with anybody. You know, and I'm not going to be the first one. Because I did a Zoom with her.
Yeah.
And you get a sense from, you know. And then this other woman, say also in Brooklyn, you know, very nice. Actually, when I drove up to the lake, I actually talked to her. I said, you call me on my phone because I have 4 hours to kill. Might as well talk to you.
And that's exactly how you put it.
I said, look, you know, and so, and she did. She which was actually, but you know, I don't know. She talked a lot about nothing, you know. These women. It's just like, okay, I
kind of feel like we need to get like a woman on the show just to sort of like,
I think
I would love to, I could just sit back and just listen to you guys like,
I know,
argue.
But I'm not, but look, I don't think there's anything wrong with me. I really don't. Like when it comes to these women.
I think if anything, you're just too picky.
No, I'm not picky. I'm just like. It's just that they're boring as fuck. I mean, I need somebody that has that can tell not even tell a joke, but just look at life in a funny way. And I can do like 10 minutes of linear conversation, fine. But after that, I want to blow my brain off. You know, she's telling me she's like a kindergarten teacher. Okay. Oh, what can you possibly say about that? I mean, and she goes, but you know, she was nice. But I felt like I was... Did you ever see Little House on the Prairie?
Bits and pieces.
Right. So it's like very old-time America. They go home. They work in the yard. They, you know... It's all very, very vanilla flavor. That's the way I felt. I felt like I was getting, like... I felt like I was talking to a Mormon or something. Like, no, I'm trying to, like, say something interesting to get it going. She's like, yeah, I'm a kindergarten teacher. Now it's my summer off.
Yeah.
She didn't sound like that. But, I mean... I'm like, okay. And she's telling me about a dog. Okay. I mean, like, what can you do with that? What can you do with a kindergarten teacher who has time off and talks about her dog? And she goes, I'm a homebody. I don't go out much. Yesterday I went out for ice cream, she tells me. I'm like, oh, what flavor? You know, Jesus Christ, I mean, really, I'm not, it's like, what, did you put sprinkles on the thing? It's awful, man. There's like an hour, and I was driving, so it was okay.
Yeah.
But like in real life, I'm not going home after a hard day's work, and then she's going to be like, oh, I just came back from a kindergarten. Great! You know, what's for dinner? I just can't do that, man. And so I just need somebody who's creative or has some spice or something. So anyway, I think she hasn't, you know, she tried. I came back, she texted me. She goes, hi. And I'm like, oh, God, here we go again. And she's very, I mean, I was just amazed that she could talk so much. She actually talked more than I do, believe it or not. But but she talked about nothing. Like, I don't know what she said, but she talked very, like, ferociously, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you're talking to a person for the first time, it's like, okay, you're talking, it's like...
Right.
First time conversations are more about, like, uncovering
right
things about the other person. It's not about talking about you know, you got up in the morning, and you know, you had a couple eggs over easy for breakfast.
Yeah, I know. You're talking about like a married couple now. Yeah, after 20
years. You don't do that on like
the first... Well, you should tell these Brooklyn women that that's not what you do. I mean, she's friendly. She was trying hard. You know, she was listening. She was asking me about Aunt Ginny. You know, like she was. You know, I give her points for that. Like, she wasn't like falling asleep like I was during the conversation. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, I just can't have like a linear conversation like that about nothing. You know, it's gotta be mm-hmm. It's gotta be some fun. And then the other woman was like. You know, I don't know if it's going to work between us because I like classical music and I don't think you do. She's telling me. I'm like, what? You're looking for red flags before we even meet? Like, yeah. I don't like classical music. You're right. But we might still like each other.
Yeah.
But now I hate you because you're looking for red... Now you're telling me it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Now I hate you.
So you can't... Yeah,
it's like
if you're looking for like that's like someone who's like looking for any excuse,
right? That's not gonna work. So my plan was for us to do this. So that was on the phone. That was on text. So then we did a Zoom call. My plan was to actually play classical music in the background.
Oh yeah,
and to be like, oh, excuse me, I'm listening to Mozart right now. I can't. You know, I'll be with you in a few minutes. You know, classical music. I mean, I can't. You know,
there's some things you can't. You can't even fake an interest in.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I like it to an extent, but it's not something. It's not my go-to.
Classical music makes me think of a Holocaust movie. You know, like just to play those music on those little gramophones. You know, like in concentration camps, and it was usually like Wagner or something. I don't know. There's nothing good. I don't think about any, or Clockwork Orange. You know, that was classical music.
Oh yeah.
He jumps out of a window. Yeah. So my dating life is not going well at all.
Yeah,
you know, I was hoping that you were going to tell me something about.
Yeah, nothing yet. We still haven't set a date to like hang out.
Maybe. Why?
My brother-in-law and sister are working on their house. So.
All right, but all you need is a phone number. You know.
Yeah, I don't know that. I mean, I don't know. I'm not even going to stress it.
All right. Well, first you have to get through the Metallica concert.
I have to at least survive that before I can think about the future.
Yeah. Well, there's two...
Oh, that's the other thing.
What?
I did a mature thing the other day.
Oh, my God.
I officially... Well, two things. They tied into each other.
Okay.
I officially set up my retirement account at work. And while I didn't... So I should be starting to contribute to it with this next paycheck. And I also, while I didn't put any money into this other thing, I set up an investment account through Fidelity.
I'm sorry, I just fell asleep. What'd you say?
That's right.
401J?
401K through work. I set that up. My next paycheck should be the start of my contributions.
Great. So when you talk to this new woman in your life, maybe you could tell her, hey, I just set up my 401k.
Yeah.
So I'm ready for a relationship because I'm ready. I'm back to the future. I'm ready for the future.
Right.
Well, that's good. I don't have anything set for my retirement, by the way. So you know, I might ask you for money at some point. You know,
okay.
when you're, I don't know. What are you gonna do? Like $5 a month, and it's gonna grow
10% of each paycheck.
10% of each paycheck. So okay,
that actually should just be like under 100.
Right. Well, you're a catch. I mean, now you have your future planned. You know,
sort of. I would say I'm definitely heading in a good direction. It's interesting. It's actually kind of interesting when you if you're an as-is connoisseur, it's just British Mark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could easily see from episode one up through now a clear like progression on my part.
Right. Right. Yeah. For me, it's a complete slide.
Actually, yours, I say it's about the same.
I don't know. I feel I have very few summers left. You know, I feel. I mean, I guess life-wise, remember when I was, like, unemployed for the majority of the first...
That was a good arc, yeah.
Yeah, I was employed and I kept getting, like, prostate exams. That was not a good time in my life, you know? So I'd say the first 30 episodes, I was invaded anally a lot and I didn't have a job. And then I did a podcast. I'm like, well, I went to the doctor again today. So I'd say from that, I mean, nobody's touched my butt in a while. That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, I touch it when I wipe myself, but that's a different story. So, but yeah.
I guess in that respect, yeah, things have actually worked out for you. And actually, like the summer, I know you said you wanted to have, like, an eventful summer. I would say you've had a pretty eventful summer so far.
It's eventful, but I have the fear of missing out thing, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not really living my best life, you know? I'm living an okay life. You know, so I'm not complaining. I'm not in a concentration camp, you know. I'm not getting prostate exams every second. But, you know, I'm dealing with Gaber. I'm dealing with, like, tonight I'm going to drive and probably circle for 2 hours finding a parking spot at the fucking ass. I told you I went to the shore last week, couldn't find a parking spot. Yeah. So, like, my life is okay, but it's filled with shitty moments, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to have shitty moments. I just want to have, like, smooth sailing.
Smooth jazz.
Smooth jazz without the jazz part, right. You know? So, I don't know. It's very hard to kind of, like, it hasn't been really eventful, because every summer I do go upstate New York.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that, oh, God. I was just there I didn't even talk about this, but I had 4 days there.
Oh, yeah.
Since the last podcast, and a very weird, well, I did tell you that, you know, that I gave a little speech, and that went well, but I just meet some weird people. I'm a magnet. Again, I was talking, maybe last year I mentioned an aunt of a certain family that I know, and she's like in her 80s,
mm-hmm.
but she's had a very crazy childhood, so I saw her again. And she's like, she's telling me about, like, her abuse and her, yeah. I'm like, oh my God, why are you, you know, like, on the beach, she's telling me this. And it's like, it's very weird when you talk to an 80-year-old woman and they talk about having a cock in their mouth. It's very odd.
Yeah, it's.
I didn't enjoy that, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, so that, and then I'm sitting there, I just want to swim, you know, yeah. Like, that's all I want. So, like you said, people talk to you about stuff, and then they talk to me about stuff, and maybe that's our thing, man. Like, we, you know, maybe people tell you shit, and then people tell me shit, and then you tell me shit, and then I tell you shit.
Yeah, we're the what's a good term to sort of, like, narrow that down? We're the talk shit tours.
We're like the blank canvas. Oh, you had a thing. You had a meeting with your friend. We won't mention his name, but you had a meeting with.
Yeah,
someone that you know.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, had a good time.
Because, you know, you texted me afterwards. I couldn't gauge if you had a good time. This is what Ryan does. He texts me, but it's almost like a montage text. He'll say, "I just had dinner with this guy, a friend of mine." I'm like, so I don't know if you had a good time or a bad. It's like a montage. Like, it's like, I don't know if, you know, like, it's a blanket statement. I don't know, like, you don't say, oh my God, I just had the greatest dinner.
Oh, right.
Or, so I don't know.
Right.
So then I'm like, okay. It's almost like that woman telling me she just had a vanilla ice cream cone. I'm like, was it good? You're saying it was good?
It's pretty good.
I don't think it was pretty good.
No.
I don't know. I mean, like, when you say it was pretty good, I mean, it's just, well, like, okay, 1 to 10, it's like a 7.
It's a 7. It's a 7. It's a good conversation. No,
I actually asked you if you talked about movies, and you said no. You said you were catching up.
Pretty much,
so,
yeah.
But I was like, so would you say,
talking about, like, job stuff.
Oh, like the 401k shit?
Yeah.
Well, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to get a 401k one, and I said, no, I don't want to do that, because I don't want to save anything for the future. I want to live, you know how Simon Fever, he goes, the future is now.
Right, and then the part I always remember about that scene is when his boss is like, you can't fuck the future. The future fucks you. It catches up with you, and it fucks you when you ain't planned for it. And that's always stuck with me. And I kind of wish I could have started, like, 10 years ago.
Well, yeah.
But, like,
right, you can't go back to the future. You can't go back to the past.
Can't go back to the future, so.
Right. All we could do is go forward.
That's right.
All right, so I'm going to go forward, too. And we have about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then this is going to end.
Right.
So I'm just letting the audience, like, let them down gently. Because usually we just are very abrupt.
Yeah.
So British Mark, you know, if you listen to this, I hope you learned about the dinosaurs. And, we talked about Oppenheimer for a long time.
Yeah.
Talked about the beauty, that montage, pros and cons.
Right.
I don't know if we came to a conclusion.
I don't think so. That could be, like, the title, like, montages.
Yeah, I think
yay or nay or something.
The
like
plight
that.
Of the montage.
The plight of the montage. I like that.
That makes it sound like we talked about something.
Oh, yeah.
But, no, I actually, Bishmark often says to me that he learns something from our show. And I'm like, really? Whoa. Like, what could you possibly learn? Whoa. I know. It's like, But I think he means it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's like he's missing some kind of guy banter in his life. He's surrounded by women.
Perhaps, yeah. I would claim perhaps, you know, it's we have this sort of air about ourselves that we come across as stupid, but we actually do say a lot of profound shit.
Yeah, but you have to get through the stupid part.
Right.
You know, and I think he's just the man to do that. Oh my God, we're in the red.
Yep.
Hey, keep chasing the sun.
Bye.